wrong except to not listen to Hardin's instructions to stay away from me. No, it's fine. He's my friend. You can let him back. Why would he come here? I'm sure it has something to do with me ignoring him, but I don't understand what could be so urgent that he'd drive 40 minutes to tell me. I hang up the phone and debate whether or not to text Hardin and tell him about Zed's arrival. I toss my phone into my desk drawer and close it. Nearly the last thing I need is for Hardin to come here, since he won't be able to control his anger and will surely cause a scene on my last day at work. The last thing I need is for him to get arrested. Again. Chapter 18. Tessa. When I pull open the door to my office, Zed is standing in the hall like the angel of death. He's dressed in a black and red plaid sweatshirt, dark jeans, and sneakers. The swelling on his face hasn't gone down much, but the bruising around the edges of his eyes and nose have lightened from dark purple to a greenish blue.
"Hey, I'm sorry for coming here like this," he says.
"Is something wrong?" I ask, and walk back over to my desk. He stands awkwardly in the doorway for a moment before stepping into the room.
"No. Well, yes. I've been trying to talk to you since yesterday, but you haven't been answering my texts."
"I know. It's just that Hardin and I already have enough issues without me creating even more, and he doesn't want me to talk to you anymore."
"You're letting him tell you who you can talk to now?"
Zed sits down in the chair directly in front of my desk, and I take a seat behind it. The way we're seated gives an official, more serious tone to our conversation. It's not uncomfortable, just too formal. I look out the window before answering. "No, it's not like that. I know he's a little overbearing and may go about things the wrong way, but I can't say I blame him for not wanting me to be friends with you anymore. I wouldn't want him to spend time with someone he has feelings for either," I say. And Zed's eyes widen.
"What did you say?"
"Damn it. Nothing. I just mean, the air grows thick, and I could swear that the walls are closing in on me. Why did I just say that? Not that it isn't true, but it won't help the situation here."
"You have feelings for me?"
he asks, his eyes lighting up with each syllable. "No. Well, I did. I don't know," I ramble, wishing I could slap myself for being so quick to speak without thinking.
"It's okay if you don't, but you shouldn't have to lie about it."
"I'm not lying. I did have feelings for you. I may still have some, honestly, but I don't know. It's all confusing to me. You always say the right things, and you've always been there for me. It would make sense if I did develop those feelings. I've told you before that I care about you, but we both know it's a lost cause."
"Why is that?"
he asks. I'm not sure how many more times I can reject him before he understands where I'm coming from. "Because it's pointless. I'll never be able to be with you, or anyone for that matter. No one but him."
"You're only saying that because he has you trapped."
I try to push down the anger that is slowly building as I listen to Zed's words about Hardin. He's certainly entitled to have ill feelings toward him, but I don't like the way he's insinuating that I have no power or control when it comes to my relationship. "No, I'm saying that because I love him, and as much as I don't want to say it that boldly to you right now, I know that I have to. I don't want to lead you on more than I already have. I know you don't understand why I stay with him through all of this mess, but I love him so much, more than anything, and he doesn't have me trapped. I want to be with him." "It's true. Everything I just said to Zed is true. Whether Hardin comes to Seattle with me or not, we can try to make it work. We can use Skype, see each other on the weekends, until he goes to England. Hopefully by then he won't want to be away from me after all." Maybe the distance will make Hardin's heart grow fonder, his tone softer. It may be the key to getting him to agree to move with me. Our history has proven that we aren't very good at staying away from one another. Whether deliberately or not, we always end up together in some way. It's hard to remember a time when my days and nights didn't revolve around this man. I've tried again and again to picture a life without him, but it's nearly impossible.
"I don't think he gives you the chance to really think about what you want or what's good for you,"
Zed says with conviction, though his voice does crack.
"He only cares about himself."
"And that's where you're wrong. I know you guys have some issues between the two of you, but..."
No, you don't know about our issues at all,
he says quickly.
If you did.
He loves me, and I him, I interrupt. I'm sorry that you were brought into the middle of this. I'm so sorry. I never wanted to hurt you. He frowns.
You keep saying that to me, and yet it keeps happening.
I hate confrontation more than anything, especially when it involves hurting someone that I care for. But these things have to be said so that Zed and I can close the book on this. I'm not even sure how to categorize it. Situation? Misunderstanding? Bad timing? I look at Zed, hoping he can read the sincerity in my eyes. It wasn't my intention. I'm sorry.
You don't have to keep apologizing. I already knew this when I made the decision to come here. You made it pretty clear how you felt outside of the administration building.
Then why did you come? I ask softly.
To talk to you.
He looks around the room, then back at me.
Never mind. I don't know why I came here, really.
He sighs. Are you sure? You seemed pretty determined a few minutes ago.
No. It's pointless, like you said. I'm sorry for coming.
It's okay. You don't have to apologize, I tell him. We both keep saying that, I think. He points down at the boxes on the floor.
You're still going, then?
Yeah, I'm almost ready to leave. The air between us has become incredibly thick, and neither of us seems to know what to say to the other. Zed stares out the window at the gray sky, and I stare at the carpet beyond him. At last, he stands up and speaks, though I can barely hear his words through the sadness in his voice.
I better go, then. Sorry again for coming here. Good luck in Seattle, Tessa.
I stand up as well. I'm sorry for everything. I wish things could have been different.
So do I. More than you know,
he says, and stands up from the chair. My heart aches for him. He's always been so sweet to me, and I've done nothing but lead him on and reject him. Have you made up your mind whether you're going to press charges or not? This isn't the right time to be asking this, but I don't think I'll ever see or hear from him again.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'm over this whole thing. There's no point in dragging it out. And I did tell you that if you told me you didn't want to see me again, I would drop them, didn't I?
Suddenly, I feel like if Zed just looks at me in a certain way, I'll probably start crying. Yeah, I quietly respond. I feel like Estella in Great Expectations, toying with Pip's emotions. My own Pip stands in front of me, caramel eyes fixed on mine. And this is a role I don't really want to play. I truly am sorry for everything. I wish we could be friends, I say.
Me too. But you're not allowed to have friends.
He sighs, running his fingers over his bottom lip, pinching it in the middle. I decide not to comment on his statement. This isn't about what I'm allowed to do. I do, however, make a mental note to discuss this perception that other people have with Harden and make sure he understands that it bothers me that his attitude makes them think this about me. As if on cue, my office phone rings, breaking the silence between Zed and me. I hold my finger so he doesn't leave and pick it up.
Tessa.
Harden's rough voice carries through. Shit. Hey, I say, my voice shaky.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You don't sound fine,
he says. Why does he have to know me so well? I'm fine, I assure him again. Just distracted.
Sure. Anyway, I need to know what you want me to do with your dad. I tried to text, but you weren't answering me. I've got shit to do, and I don't know if I should leave him here or what.
I look over at Zed. He's standing by the window now, not looking at me. I don't know. Can't you take him with you? My heart is racing.
No. Hell no.
So leave him there, I say, just wanting this conversation to end. I'm going to tell Harden about Zed's visit, but I can't imagine how pissed he would be if he knew he was here now, and I sure as hell don't want him to find out.
Fine. You can deal with him when you get here.
Okay, well, I'll see you when I get home. Music begins to play through my office, and it takes me a minute to realize it's coming from Zed. He reaches into his pocket and silences it, but not before Harden notices.
What was that? Whose phone was that?
He demands. My blood suddenly runs cold until I take a moment to think about this. I shouldn't be so afraid or nervous for Harden to know Zed's here. I didn't do anything wrong. He came and he's leaving. He already gets irritated when Trevor comes by my office, and Trevor's a coworker and entitled to stop in anytime he wants.
Is fucking Trevor there?
No, it's not Trevor. Zed's here, I say, and hold my breath. The line is silent. I look at the screen to make sure the call is still connected. Harden?
Yeah?
He says, and lets out a ragged breath. Did you hear me?
Yes, Tessa, I heard you.
Okay, why isn't he screaming through the phone or threatening to kill him yet?
We'll talk about it later. Make him leave. Please.
He calmly requests. Okay.
Thank you. I'll see you when you get home.
Harden says and hangs up the phone. When I put my phone down, slightly bewildered, Zed turns to me and says,
Sorry. I know he's going to freak out on you.
No, he won't. He'll be fine, I say back, knowing it's not true, but it sounds good anyway. Harden's reaction to Zed's being in my office caught me off guard. I'd never have expected him to be so calm. I expected him to say he was on his way here. I sure hope he's not. Zed walks toward the door again.
Okay. Well, I guess I should go.
Zed, thank you for coming by. I probably won't see you again before I leave. He turns and emotion flashes in his eyes, but it disappears before I can decide which emotion it was.
I won't say meeting you hasn't complicated my life, but I wouldn't take it back. I'd go through all of this shit again. The fights with Harden, the friendships I've lost, all of it. I would go through it again for you.
He says.
I guess it's just my luck. Of course I can't meet a girl who doesn't already love someone else.
His words always get to me. Always. He's so sincere all the time, and I admire that about him.
Bye, Tessa.
He says. His words hold much more than a simple friendly goodbye, but I can't project too much into them. If I say the wrong thing, or anything at all, I'll only be leading him on again. Bye, Zed. I half smile and he takes a step toward me. For a moment, I panic, thinking he's going to kiss me, but he doesn't. He wraps his arms around me in a strong but brief hug before placing a light kiss on my forehead. He steps away immediately after and grabs hold of the door handle, almost like it's a cane.
Be careful, okay?
He says, opening the door. I will. Seattle isn't too bad, I smile. I feel very resolved now, like I have finally given him the closure he needed. He frowns and turns to leave the room. As he closes the door behind him, I hear him say gently,
I'm not talking about Seattle.
Chapter 19. Tessa. As soon as the door shuts and Zed is gone, gone for good, I close my eyes and lay my head back against the chair. I don't know what I'm feeling. All of my emotions are jumbled, swirling around me in a cloud of confusion. Part of me feels relieved to end this back and forth between Zed and me, but another, smaller part feels a significant loss. Zed is the only one of Harden's so-called friends who's been there for me constantly, and it's strange to realize that I'll never see him again. The tears burn, unwelcomed, down my cheeks as I try to collect myself. I shouldn't be crying over this. I should be happy that I can finally close the book on Zed, tuck it away, leaving it only to collect dust, never to be opened again. It's not that I want to be with him. It's not that I love him. It's not that I would ever choose him over Harden. It's just that I do care for him, and I wish things had played out differently. I wish I would have kept our relationship strictly platonic. Maybe then I wouldn't have to completely cut him out of my life. I don't know why he came back in here, but I'm glad he left before he could say anything to confuse me or hurt Harden further. My office phone rings, and I clear my throat before answering. When I say hello, I sound pathetic. Harden's voice carries through strong and clear.
Did he leave?
Yeah.
Are you crying?
I'm just... I start.
What?
He implores. I don't know. I'm just glad it's over. I wipe at my eyes again. He sighs through the line and surprises me by simply saying,
Me too.
The tears are no longer falling, but my voice is hideous. Thank you, I pause, for being so understanding about this. That went much better than I'd expected, and I don't know if I should be relieved or slightly worried. I decide to go with relieved and finish the last of my time at Vance as peacefully as possible. Around 3, Kimberly stops by my office. Behind her is a girl who I'm sure I've never seen at the office before. "Tessa, this is Amy, my replacement," Kimberly says, introducing the quiet yet stunning girl. I get up from where I'm reading, trying to reassure Amy with a friendly smile. "Hi, Amy, I'm Tessa. You'll love it here." "Thank you. I already love it," she says excitedly. Kim laughs. "Well, I just wanted to stop by your office while we were pretending to be taking a tour of the building." "Oh, yes. You're teaching her to replace you, all right," I tease. "Hey, being engaged to the boss has its perks," Kim jokes back. Beside her, Amy laughs, and then Kimberly leads her down another hallway. My last day here finally ends, and I find myself wishing it could have gone slower. I'm going to miss this place, and I'm slightly nervous to go home to Hardin. I take one last look around my first office. My eyes focus on the desk first. My stomach tightens as memories of Hardin and me on the desk flood my senses. It seems so extreme, having sex in an office when anyone could walk in at any moment. I was too distracted by Hardin to think of anything else, which seems to be a pattern in my everyday life. On the way home, I stop by Connor's to get a few groceries, just enough to make dinner tonight since we're leaving in the morning. I'm excited but nervous about the trip. I hope Hardin can keep his temper in check for the 2-day vacation with his family. Since that doesn't seem likely, my next hope is that the boat is big enough for the 5 of us to have a little breathing room. Back at the apartment, I unlock the front door and push it open with my foot, picking up the grocery bags from the floor as I step inside. The living room is a mess. Empty water bottles and food wrappers litter the coffee table. My father and Hardin sit on opposite ends of the couch.
"How was your day, Tessie?"
my father asks, craning his neck to look over at me. "Good. It was my last day there," I tell him, even though he already knows. I begin to clear their trash from the table and floor.
"I'm happy you had a good day,"
my father says. I look at Hardin, who doesn't look at me. His gaze is fixed on the television screen. "I'm going to make dinner, then get in the shower," I tell them, and my father follows me into the kitchen. As I unload the grocery bags and put the ground beef and box of taco shells on the counter, my father watches me with interest. At last, he says,
"One of my friends said he can pick me up here later if that's okay. I know you're leaving tomorrow for a few days."
"Yeah, that's fine. We can drop you off in the morning if that would be better for you," I offer.
"No, you've already been so generous. Just promise me you'll let me know when you get back from your trip."
"Okay. How will I get in touch with you?" He rubs the back of his neck.
"Maybe just drive down Lamar. I'm usually out there."
"Okay, I will."
"I'll go call him back now and let him know I'm ready."
He disappears from the kitchen. I hear Hardin teasing my father about the fact that he has to memorize phone numbers because he doesn't own a phone, and I roll my eyes when my father begins the, "When I was a kid, no one had cell phones" speech. Tacos with ground beef are easy to make and don't require too much thought. I wish Hardin would come into the kitchen and talk to me, but I suppose it's better if he waits until my father leaves. I set up the table for dinner and call for the 2 of them. Hardin enters first, barely making eye contact with me, followed by my father. As he sits, my father says,
"Chad will be here soon to get me. I appreciate you guys letting me stay. It was mighty generous of you 2.
He looks back and forth between Hardin and me.
"Thank you so much, Tessie. H-bomb,"
he adds. The way Hardin rolls his eyes at my father, I can tell this is some inside joke between them. "It's no problem, really," I tell him.
"I'm just so glad we found each other again,"
he says, and starts eating his meal with an animated ferocity. Me too. I smile, still not able to process that this man is my father, the man that I haven't seen in 9 years. The man who I had so many ill feelings toward is just sitting in my kitchen eating with my boyfriend and me. I look over to Hardin, expecting a rude comment from him, but he says nothing and quietly eats his meal. His silence is driving me mad. I wish he'd just say something. Anything, really. Sometimes his silence is far worse than his yelling.
Chapter 20. Harden. After we finish eating, Tessa gives her father her final, somewhat stiff goodbye, and heads into the bathroom for a shower. I was planning on getting in the shower with her, but Richard's friend is taking all damn night to pick his ass up. "Is he coming today, or..." I begin. Richard nods about 20 times, but then looks at the window with a slightly worried expression. "Yeah, yeah," he said he'd be here soon. "He probably just got lost or something." "Sure," I say. He smiles. "Won't you miss having me around?" "I won't go that far." "Well, maybe I'll find myself a job and see you both in Seattle." "Neither of us will be in Seattle." He looks at me sagely. "Sure," he repeats, using my word from moments ago. A knock at the door ends our obnoxious conversation, and as he goes to answer it, I stand up, just in case he needs an extra little push out the door. "Thanks for picking me up, man," Tessa's dad says to his friend. He remains in the doorway, but peeks his head in farther. He's tall, with long black hair swept back in a disgusting, greasy ponytail. His cheeks are sunken in, his clothes are ratty, and his fingernails are black lines on filthy, bony hands. "What the fuck?" The man's gravelly voice matches his appearance when he asks with some awe,
"This is your daughter's place?"
This man is no drunk.
"Yeah, nice, huh? I'm proud of her."
Richard smiles, and the guy pats his shoulder, nodding in agreement.
"Who's this?"
the man asks. They both look over at me. Richard smiles.
"Oh, him? That's Harden, Tessie's boyfriend." "Cool. I'm Chad," he states,
saying it almost like he's a local personality I should somehow know. Not a drunk. So much worse. "Okay," I say, watching his eyes as they move around our living room. I'm relieved that Tess is in the shower and doesn't have to meet this creep. When I hear the bathroom door open, I curse at myself. I spoke too fucking soon. Chad lifts his long-sleeved shirt to scratch at his arms, making me feel like Tessa for a moment as I get a sudden urge to mop the fucking floor.
"Harden?"
Her voice trails down the hall.
"You should go now,"
I tell the scraggly pair before me in the most threatening tone possible.
"I want to meet her,"
Chad says with a dark twinkle in his eye, and I have to concentrate to keep myself in my place and not throw both these bags of bones into the hallway and out the window.
"No, you don't,"
I say. Richard looks at me.
"Okay, okay, we're going,"
he says and starts ushering his friend out. "I'll see you later, Harden.
Thanks again. Stay out of jail."
And with a smirk and that parting shot, he leaves the apartment.
"Harden,"
Tessa calls again as she enters the living room. "They just left."
"What's wrong?"
she asks.
"What's wrong? Let's see. Zed came to your office, and your drunk of a dad just brought some creepy fucking dude into our apartment."
A brief pause, and I add,
"Are you sure your dad only drinks?" "What?"
The shoulder of her T-shirt, well, my T-shirt, slips down to bare her shoulder. She pushes it back up and sits down on the couch.
"What do you mean, only drinks?"
Looking at her, I don't want to plant the seed that her dad's not only a homeless drunk, but a drug addict, too. He doesn't look as bad as the asshole who just came to pick him up, but I still have a weird feeling about this shit. Even so, I just say, "I don't know. Never mind. I was just thinking out loud."
"Okay,"
she quietly answers. I know her well enough to be certain that the thought of her father being on drugs hasn't crossed her mind, and that she'd never guess I'm thinking it from what I said.
"Are you mad at me?"
Her voice is soft, too timid.
I know she's waiting for me to explode any moment. I have been purposely avoiding conversation with her for a reason. No.
Are you sure?
She looks at me with those big, beautiful eyes, begging for me to say something. They do the trick. No, I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm really mad, yeah. But I don't want to fight with you over it. I'm trying to change, you know? Keep my shit together and not flip out on you over every little thing. I sigh, rubbing the back of my neck. Even though this isn't a little thing, I've told you time and time again not to see Zed, but you still do. I look at her coldly, not to be mean, but because I have to see how her eyes react when I add, "How would you feel if I did that to you?" She practically crumples before my eyes.
I would feel terrible. I know I've been wrong for seeing him, she says without defense.
Well, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting her to yell at me and stick up for that shithead Zed like always.
Yes, you have,
I say, then sigh. But if you say you told him it's done, then it's done. I've done everything I can to keep him away from you, but he doesn't stop. So you have to be the one to keep him away.
It's done, I swear. I won't see him again.
She looks up at me, and I shudder at the thought of her on the phone earlier, her crying over their goodbye. We aren't going to that party on Saturday, I say, and her face falls.
Why not?
Because I don't think it's a good idea. Actually, I know it isn't.
I want to go.
She presses her full lips into a line. We aren't going, I tell her again. Her spine shoots up a little, and she pushes back.
If I want to go, I'll go.
Fuck, she's so fucking stubborn. Can we please just discuss it later? We have shit to do if you want me to go on this fucking stupid-ass boat shit. She smiles playfully.
Could you fit any more curse words in that sentence?
And I smile as I have a vision of her bent over my knee for being so smarmy. She'd probably like that, actually. Lying across my lap, my hand hitting her skin. Not too hard, just hard enough to turn the skin pink.
Harden?
My perverted thoughts interrupted. I push them away. For now. She would hide behind her hands if I told her what I was daydreaming about.
Chapter 21. Tessa. I shake his arm again, roughly this time. Harden, you have to get up. Now. We're going to be late. I'm already dressed and ready. Our bags have already been placed in the car, and I've given him as much time to sleep as possible. Heck, last night I even did all the packing. Not that he would have done a very good job of it anyway.
Not going,
he groans. Please get up. I whine and tug at his arm. God, I wish he was a morning person like me. He covers his face with the pillow, and I grab it and toss it onto the floor.
No, go away.
I decide to take a different approach and bring my hand to the front of his boxers. He fell asleep in his jeans last night, and I had a hell of a time tugging them down his legs without waking him. But now he's been left vulnerable and manipulable. My fingernails gently graze the inked skin just above the waistband. He doesn't budge. I dip my hand fully into his boxers, and he opens his eyes.
Good morning,
he says with a lusty smile. I remove my hand and stand up. Get up. He yawns dramatically and looks down at his boxers and says,
Looks like I already am.
When he doesn't look back up, I see he's pretending to be asleep again, and soon he starts making loud cartoon snoring noises. It's inconvenient, but adorable and playful. I hope he remains this way for the rest of the week. Really, I'll settle for the rest of the day. I reach into his boxers again, and when his eyes pop open to look at me like an eager puppy, I say, uh-uh, and pull my hand back out.
Not fair,
he whines. But he does get up, pulling yesterday's jeans back on. He walks over to the dresser and grabs a black shirt, looks at me, then puts it back and pulls out a white one. He runs his fingers through his hair, making it stand straight up before pushing it back down.
Do I have time to brush my teeth?
His tone is sarcastic, and his voice is raspy from sleep. Yes, hurry up. Brush your teeth so we can go, I instruct, and do a quick walkthrough of the apartment to make sure everything is in order. Minutes later, Hardin joins me in the living room, and we finally leave. Ken, Karen, and Landon are waiting for us in the driveway when we arrive. I roll down the window. Sorry we're a few minutes late, I apologize, as we pull up next to where they stand. It's okay. We figured we'd all ride together since it's quite a drive, Karen says with a smile.
Fuck no,
Hardin whispers next to me. Come on. She gestures to the black SUV filling the other half of the driveway. Ken bought me this for my birthday and we never use it.
No, hell no,
Hardin says a little louder. It'll be fine, I say quietly to him.
Tessa,
he begins. Hardin, please don't make this difficult. Please, I beg. Maybe, just maybe. I blink my eyes seductively, hoping that will work. After looking at me for a moment, his eyes finally soften.
Fine. Fuck, you're lucky I love you.
I squeeze his hand. Thank you. Then I turn back to Karen. Okay, I say with a smile, and turn off my car. Hardin puts our bags into the back of Karen's SUV, scowling the whole time.
This is going to be fun,
Landon laughs as I climb into the car. Hardin sits next to me in the back row after making a comment about not having to sit next to Landon. As Ken pulls onto the street, Karen turns on the radio and begins to sing along softly.
This is some shit straight from a corny comedy,
Hardin says, and puts his hand over mine before pulling them both to his lap. Chapter 22. Tessa. Wisconsin! Karen says loudly, clapping her hands together, then pointing at a passing truck. I can't help but laugh at Hardin's horrified expression.
Oh my fucking God,
he huffs, laying his head back on the seat. Would you stop? She's having fun, I scold him.
Texas,
Landon calls out.
Just open the door and I'll jump out here,
Hardin adds. So dramatic, I tease and look over at him. So she plays the license plate game. I'd think you could relate. You and your friends seem awful fond of silly games, too, like Truth or Dare. Before Hardin can say something smart back, Karen exclaims, We're so excited for you two to see the boat and the cabin. I look over at her. Cabin? I ask. Yeah, we have a small cabin on the water there. I think you'll like it, Tessa, she says. I'm so relieved to find out I won't have to sleep on the boat like I'd assumed.
I'm hoping the sun stays out. This weather is nice for February. It's even better in the summer. Maybe we can all come back,
Ken asks, looking in the rearview mirror. Yeah, Landon and I answer in unison. Hardin rolls his eyes. Apparently he's going to stick to his pouty, childlike persona for the remainder of the drive.
Do you have everything ready for Seattle, Tessa?
Ken asks.
I spoke with Christian yesterday, and he's really looking forward to you coming.
I feel Hardin's eyes on me, but I'm not going to let that stop me. I plan to start packing when we get back, but I've already enrolled in my classes at the new campus, I tell him.
That campus is nothing compared to mine,
Ken teases, and Karen laughs.
No, it really is a nice campus. If you have any trouble, let me know.
I smile, happy to have him on my side. Thank you, I will.
Come to think of it,
he goes on,
we're getting a new professor from the Seattle campus next week. He's replacing one of our religion professors. Oh, which one?
Landon asks, looking at me with a raised brow.
Soto, the young one.
Ken looks in the rearview mirror again.
He's your professor right now, isn't he? Yeah, he is,
Landon answers.
I don't remember where he's going, but I think he's transferring out,
Ken says.
Good thing.
Landon remarks under his breath, but I catch it and smile at him. Neither one of us really likes Professor Soto's style and lack of academic rigor, though I did enjoy the journaling he had us do. Karen's voice is soft, and it slides between my thoughts.
Do the two of you have a place already?
No, I had an apartment, or so I thought, but the woman seems to have dropped off the face of the earth. It was perfect, too, right in my budget and close to the office, I tell her. Hardin shifts a little beside me, and I want to add that he isn't joining me in Seattle, but I'm hoping to use this trip to convince him otherwise, so I stay quiet.
You know, Tessa, I have a few friends in Seattle. I can see about getting you a place before Monday if you'd like.
Ken offers.
No,
Hardin says quickly. I look over at him. Actually, I would like that, I say, and meet Ken's reflected gaze. Otherwise, I'll be spending a fortune staying at a hotel until I can find a place. Hardin waves his dad off.
It's fine. I'm sure Sandra will call her back.
That's strange, I think, and look at him. How do you know her name? I ask.
What?
He blinks a couple of times.
You've only said it 100 times.
Oh, I say, and he spreads his hand across my thigh, squeezing gently.
Well, just let me know if you want me to call anyone.
Ken offers again. After another 20 minutes or so, Karen looks back at us, excitement bursting through her expression. So how about I spy? Landon's lips turn up into a vibrant smile.
Yeah, Hardin. How about I spy?
Hardin leans against me, his head on my shoulder, and his arm wraps around me.
I'm good. I mean, it sounds wonderful, but it's nap time for me. I'm sure Tessa and Landon would love to play.
Despite his mocking the game, the public intimacy warms me and makes me smile. I remember a time when Hardin would only hold my hand under the dinner table at his father's house, and now he doesn't seem fazed to be holding me in front of his family. Okay, I'll go first, Karen says. I spy with my little eye something blue, she squeals. Hardin chuckles lightly against me.
Ken's shirt,
he whispers and nuzzles further into me.
The navigation screen?
Landon guesses. No. Ken's shirt? I ask. Yes! Tessa, it's your turn now. Hardin pinches me a little in acknowledgement, but I'm focused on Karen's massive smile. She's having way too much fun with these cheesy games, but she's too sweet for me to not play along. Okay, I spy something. I look down at Hardin. Black.
Hardin's soul.
Landon shouts, and I laugh. Hardin opens one eye and sticks up a middle finger at his stepbrother. You're right, I exclaim, giggling.
Well then, the lot of you can shut up so me and my black soul can get some sleep,
he says, eyes closed. We ignore him and continue, and only a few minutes later, Hardin's breathing turns heavy, and he begins to snore lightly into my neck. He mumbles for a moment before sliding down, putting his head on my lap and bringing his other arm around my waist. Landon seems to take that as a cue and lies across the middle seat, joining Hardin in sleep. Even Karen times out and ends up falling asleep. I enjoy the silence as I stare out the window, watching the lush scenery shoot past us.
We're getting close. Only a few more miles,
Ken says to the car, to nobody in particular. I nod in acknowledgement and run my fingers through Hardin's soft hair. His eyelids flutter lightly under my touch, but he doesn't wake up. I trail my fingers down his back, slowly, taking in the view of him sleeping so peacefully, his arms wrapped tightly around my body. Soon we turn onto a small street, the entirety of it lined with large pine trees. Silently I watch out the window as we turn onto another street and round a corner, bringing the coast into view with sudden immediacy. It's beautiful. Glittering blue water meets the shoreline, creating a gorgeous contrast. The grass is brown, though, dead from a harsher-than-normal Washington winter. I can't imagine how beautiful this place must be in the summer.
Here we are,
Ken says, pulling into a long driveway. I look toward the front of the car and see a large wooden cabin. Clearly, the Scott's definition of small cabin is very different from mine. The one I'm looking at is 2 stories tall, made entirely of dark cherry wood, and has a white-trimmed porch wrapping around the ground floor. Hardin, wake up. I run my index finger over his jawline. His eyes open, and he blinks rapidly, confused for a moment. Then he sits up and wipes his eyes with his knuckles.
Honey, we're here,
Ken says to his wife, and she lifts up her head, followed by her son. Still a little dazed, Hardin carries our bags inside, where Ken shows him to the room we're staying in. I follow Karen into the kitchen while Landon takes his bags to his room as well. The cathedral-style ceiling in the living room is repeated in the kitchen on a smaller scale. It takes me a moment to figure out what's so peculiar about this room, But then I see that the kitchen here is a smaller yet equally elegant version of the Scott's kitchen at home. This place is beautiful, I say to Karen. Thank you for inviting us. Thank you, dear. It's nice to finally have company in it. She smiles and opens the refrigerator. We love having the two of you here. I'd never have thought that Harden would come along on a family trip. I know it's a short one, but this means the world to Ken, she says, speaking softly to ensure I'm the only one to hear.
I'm glad he came along, too. I think he'll enjoy himself.
I say the words, hoping that once they're out there in the air, they'll come true. Karen turns and grabs my hand warmly.
I sure will miss you when you go to Seattle.
I haven't had much time with Harden, but I'll miss him, too. I'll still be around. It's only a couple hours away, I assure her. And myself, really. I'm going to miss her and Ken. And I can't even allow my mind to wander into thoughts of Landon's looming departure. Even though I'm leaving for Seattle before he leaves for New York, I'm not ready for him to be so far away. Being in Seattle, I'll still be in the same state, at least. But New York is far. So far.
I hope so. With Landon gone, too, I'm afraid I'll be lost. I've been a mother for nearly 20 years.
She begins to tear up.
I'm sorry. I'm just so proud of him.
She dabs at her eyes with her fingers, stopping the tears, and looks around the kitchen like she'll find a task that will stop this feeling she's having.
Maybe the three of you can run to the store down the road while Ken gets the boat ready.
Yeah, of course we can, I say, as the three men enter the room. Harden comes up behind me.
I left the bags on the bed for you to unpack. I know I'd do it wrong.
Thank you, I say, grateful that he didn't even try. He likes to shove things haphazardly into dresser drawers, and it drives me mad. I told Karen we'd go to the store for her while your father gets the boat ready.
Okay.
He shrugs. You too, I turn to Landon, who nods.
Landon knows where it is. It's just down the road. You can walk or take the car. The keys are hanging by the door,
Ken says as we head out. The weather is forgiving today, and the sun makes it feel much warmer than it should be this early in the year. The sky is a clear blue. I can hear the waves crashing and smell the salt in the air each time the wind blows. We decide to walk down to the small store at the end of the street, and I'm comfortable in jeans and a short-sleeved shirt. This place is so nice. It feels like we're in our own world, I say to Harden and Landon.
We are in our own world. No one bothers to come to the beach in fucking February,
Harden comments. Well, I think it's nice, I say, ignoring his attitude.
Anyway.
Landon looks at Harden, who is kicking at the rocks as we walk down the gravel road.
Dakota has an audition for a small production this week.
Really? I say. That's so great.
Yeah, she's really excited. I hope she gets the part. Didn't she just start school, though? Why would they give the part to an amateur?
Harden's voice is calm, wondering. Harden.
They would give her the part because regardless of her being an amateur or not, she's an excellent dancer and has been studying ballet her entire life.
Landon fires back. Harden holds up his hands comically.
Don't get testy. I'm just saying.
But Landon defends his love.
Well, don't. She's talented, and she's going to get the part.
Harden rolls his eyes.
Okay. Damn.
It's nice that you support her. I smile at Landon in an attempt to break up the tension brewing between him and Harden.
I'll always support her, no matter what she does. That's why I'm moving all the way to New York.
Landon looks at Harden, and Harden's jaw tenses.
So this is how this trip is going to be, then? The two of you fucking ganging up on me? Count me fucking out, then. I didn't even want to come on this shit anyway.
Harden spits. The three of us stop walking, and Landon and I both turn to Harden. I'm thinking about how to calm him down when Landon suddenly says,
Well, then you shouldn't have come. We'd all have a better time without you and your sour attitude anyway.
My eyes widen at Landon's harsh remark, and I feel the urge to defend Harden, but I stay quiet. Besides, Landon's right, mostly. Harden shouldn't make it his goal to ruin our trip by having an attitude for no good reason.
Excuse me? You're the one with a fucking attitude because I said your girlfriend was an amateur. No, you started being a jerk in the car,
Landon says.
Yeah, because your mum wouldn't stop singing along to every fucking song on the radio and yelling state names.
Harden's voice rises precipitously.
While I was trying to enjoy the scenery.
I step between them as Harden tries to move toward Landon. Landon takes a deep breath and stares at Hardin, challenging him.
My mom is trying to make sure we all have a nice time. Well, then maybe she should...
Stop it, you guys. You can't fight like this the entire time we're here. No one will be able to stand it, so please just stop, I beg, not wanting to take sides between my best friend and my boyfriend. They look at each other for a few more tense moments. I nearly laugh at the way they behave like brothers, despite the fact that they try so hard not to.
Okay,
Landon says finally and sighs.
Fine,
Hardin huffs. The rest of our walk is silent, aside from Hardin's boots kicking at the rocks and Landon's soft humming. The calm after the storm, or before it, or just between them, I suppose. What are you going to wear on the boat? I ask Landon as we walk up the driveway to the cabin.
Shorts, I think. It's warm right now, but I'll probably bring a sweatsuit.
Oh, I wish it was warmer so I could wear a swimsuit. I don't even own one, but the idea of shopping for one with Hardin makes me smile. I can picture him saying crude and perverted things. He'd probably end up in the dressing room with me. I don't think I'd stop him. I need to stop thinking these type of things, especially while Landon is talking about the weather, and I should at least appear to be listening.
The boat is insane. It's so big,
Landon says. Oh, I cringe. Now that we're closer to the boat ride, my nerves are beginning to take over. Landon and I go into the kitchen to unpack the groceries, and Hardin heads into the bedroom without a word. Landon looks over his shoulder to where his stepbrother disappeared to.
He's pretty sensitive when it comes to talking about Seattle. He still hasn't agreed to go, has he?
I look around the room to be sure no one can hear us. No, not exactly, I say, and chew on my bottom lip in embarrassment.
I don't get it,
Landon says, looking through the bags.
What's so bad about Seattle that he won't go with you? Does he have some sort of history there?
No. Well, not that I know of, I start to say, but then Hardin's letter comes to mind. I don't remember him mentioning any hardships he'd gone through in Seattle. Could he have left them out? I don't think so, and I hope not. I'm not ready for any more surprises.
Well, there has to be a reason, because he can't even go to the bathroom without you, so I can't imagine him being okay with you moving away without him. I thought he'd do anything to keep you close to him. Literally anything,
Landon says with emphasis. Me too. I sigh, not knowing why Hardin has to be so stubborn. And he does go to the bathroom without me. Sometimes, I joke. Landon laughs along.
Barely. He probably installed a hidden camera on your shirt to keep track of you. Cameras aren't my thing. I'm more of a tracking device type of guy.
Hardin's voice makes me jump, and I look over to find him leaning in the doorway of the kitchen.
Thanks for helping prove my point,
Landon says, but Hardin chuckles, shaking his head. He seems to be in a better mood, thank goodness.
Where is this boat? I'm bored listening to you two talk shit about me.
We weren't. We were joking, I tell him, and walk over to hug him where he's standing.
It's fine. I do the same when you're not around,
he says in a mocking tone, although I can't help but detect a hint of seriousness behind the words. Chapter 23. Tessa.
Dock's a little shaky, but sturdy enough. I need to get someone out here to remodel it,
Ken muses as we follow him out to where the boat's moored. With their backyard leading directly to the water, the view is incredible. The waves crash along the rocks lining the shore, and instinctively I step behind Hardin.
What's wrong?
He asks quietly. Nothing. I'm just a little nervous. He turns around to face me, sliding both of his hands into the back pockets of my jeans.
It's only water, baby. It'll be okay.
He smiles, but I can't tell if he's mocking me or being sincere. It's only when his lips brush my cheek that my doubt disappears.
I forgot you don't like water.
He pulls me closer. I like water. In swimming pools.
And streams?
His eyes glitter with humor. I smile at the memory. Only one stream in particular. I was nervous that day, too. Hardin only convinced me to get into the water by bribing me. He had promised to answer one of my endless questions about him in exchange for me getting into the water with him. Those days seemed so distant, so ancient, really, but the ongoing theme of secrecy still litters our present. Hardin takes my hand in his as we follow his family down the dock to the incredibly intimidating vessel waiting at the end. I don't know much about boats, but I think this one may be a giant-sized pontoon boat. I know it's not a yacht, but it's bigger than any fishing boat I've ever seen. It's so big, I whisper to Hardin.
Shh, don't talk about my dick in front of my family,
he teases. I love this playful yet grumpy mood he's in. His smile is contagious. Then the dock creaks beneath my feet, and I squeeze tight against Hardin in panic.
Watch the step,
Ken calls back to us as he climbs onto the ladder connecting the boat and the dock. Hardin's hand moves to my back as he helps me up the ladder. I try to force myself to imagine that it's just a small ladder at a playground, not something attached to an enormous boat. The reassurance that comes with Hardin's touch is the only thing keeping me from running back up the shaky dock into the cabin and hiding under the bed. Ken helps us each onto the deck, and once there, I can see how nice the boat is, decorated in white wood and caramel leather. The seating area is large, big enough for all of us and then some to sit comfortably. When he tries to help Hardin aboard, his son waves him off. When he's fully on the deck, he looks around and says plainly,
"It's nice to see that your boat is nicer than Mum's house."
Ken's proud smile fades. "Hardin," I whisper, tugging at his hand.
"Sorry,"
he huffs. Ken sighs but seems to accept his son's apology before walking over to the other side of the boat.
"You okay?"
Hardin leans into me. "Yeah, just be nice, please. I'm already nauseous."
"I'll be nice. I already apologized."
He takes a seat on one of the lounges and I join him. Landon takes the grocery bag and leans down to unpack cans of soda and bags of snacks. I gaze across the expanse of the boat and out onto the water. It's beautiful, and the sun is dancing across the surface.
"I love you,"
Hardin says softly into my ear. The boat's engine comes to life with a light hum, and I scoot closer to Hardin. "I love you," I say back, still looking out onto the water.
"If we get out far enough, we may see a few dolphins, or if we're lucky, a whale,"
Ken says loudly.
"A whale would surely knock this boat over in no time flat,"
Hardin remarks, and I gulp at the thought.
"Shit, sorry,"
he apologizes. The farther and farther we get from shore, the calmer I become. It's odd. I thought it would be the opposite, but there's a certain serenity that comes with being so disconnected from the land. "Do you see dolphins a lot out here?" I ask Karen as she sips on her soda. She smiles. "No, only once. But we still try."
"I can't believe the weather today. It feels like June,"
Landon remarks, pulling his T-shirt over his head. "Are you working on your tan?" I ask him, taking in his pale torso.
"Or your ghost impression,"
Hardin adds. Landon rolls his eyes, but otherwise ignores the remark.
"Yep, even though I won't need a tan in the city."
"If the water wasn't ice cold, we could all go for a swim closer to shore," Karen says. "Maybe in the summer," I remind her, and she nods happily.
"At least we still have the jacuzzi back at the cabin,"
Ken says. Enjoying the moment, I look up at Hardin, but he stays quiet, staring off into the distance.
"Look, there."
Ken points behind us. Hardin and I both turn quickly, and it takes me a moment to see what he's spotted. It's a pod of dolphins leaping through the water. They aren't close to the boat, but they're close enough that we can see the way they move in sync through the waves. "It's our lucky day," Karen laughs. The wind blows my hair across my face, blocking my view for a moment, and Hardin's hand reaches up to tuck it back behind my ear. It's always the simple things he does, the small ways he finds to touch me without thought that make my stomach flutter. "That was so neat," I say to him once the dolphins have fully passed by.
"Yeah, it was, actually,"
he says, sounding surprised. After 2 hours of conversation about boating, the beautiful summers along this spot of coastline, sports, and an awkward mention of Seattle that Hardin halted almost as soon as it began, Ken leads us back to the shore.
"That wasn't so bad, was it?"
Hardin and I ask each other at the same time.
"Guess not,"
he laughs, helping me down the ladder to the dock. The sun has marked his cheeks and the bridge of his nose, and his hair is unruly and blown out from the wind. He's so lovely, it hurts. We all walk across the backyard, and all I can think about is how much I want to hold on to that peaceful sensation of being out on the water. As we enter the cabin, Karen announces, "I'll make us all lunch. I'm sure everyone is hungry, and disappears into the kitchen. The rest of us stand there silent and content as she walks off. Finally, Hardin asks his father,
"What else is there to do here?" "Well, there's a nice restaurant further in town. We were planning for all of us to have dinner there tomorrow. There's an old-fashioned movie theater, a library." "So a bunch of lame shit, then?"
Hardin says. His words harsh, but his tone playful.
"It's a nice place. You should give it a chance,"
Ken says, not in the least bit offended. The four of us head into the kitchen and stand around while Karen puts together a platter of sandwiches and fruit. Hardin, who is being overly affectionate today, rests his hand on my hip. Maybe this place is good for him. After lunch, I help Karen clean the kitchen and make lemonade while Landon and Hardin discuss how terrible modern literature is. I can't help but laugh when Landon mentions Harry Potter. This sends Hardin into a 5-minute-long speech on why he never has read and never will read the books, and Landon tries desperately to get him to change his mind. After the lemonade is finished and greedily drunk down, Ken says to us all,
"Karen and I are going to head down to our friend's cabin a few doors down for an hour or two, if you all want to come."
Hardin looks over at me from across the room, and I wait for him to answer.
"I'll pass,"
he finally says, still looking at me. Landon looks back and forth between Hardin and me.
"I'll come,"
he says plainly, but I swear I catch him smirk at Hardin before he stands up to join Ken and his mom.
Chapter 24. Hardin. I'm thinking they will never leave, but as soon as they do, I pull her over to the couch with me.
"You didn't want to go?"
she asks.
"Fuck no. Why the hell would I want to go?
I'd much rather stay here with you. Alone," I say, and brush the hair back from her neck. She squirms a little from the light shiver my touch spreads across her skin. "Did you want to go sit and listen to a room full of boring-ass people talk about boring-ass shit?" I ask her, my lips barely grazing her jaw.
"No."
Her breathing has already changed.
"You're sure?"
I tease, and run my nose along her neck, nudging her to tilt her head.
"I don't know. It may have been more fun than this," she says.
I chuckle into her neck, kissing her where the goosebumps on her skin appear from my breath.
"Not fucking likely. We do have a hot tub in our room, remember?" "Yeah, but it's no good, because I don't have a swimsuit," she starts.
I suck lightly at her neck and imagine what she'd look like in a bathing suit.
"Fuck, you don't need one,"
I whisper. She moves her head back and looks at me like I'm crazy.
"Yes, I do. I'm not getting in a hot tub with no clothes on."
"Why not?" It sounds like a pretty fun time to me.
"Because your family is here."
I don't know why you always use that as an excuse. My hand travels down to her lap, and I press against the seam of her jeans.
"Sometimes I think you may like that." "Like what?"
she asks, practically fucking panting.
"The possibility of being caught." "Why would anyone like that?"
"A lot of people do. The thrill of being caught, you know?" I apply more pressure between her legs, and she tries to clamp them shut, struggling against what she wants and what she thinks she shouldn't want.
"No, that's... I don't know, but I don't like it."
She lies. I'm pretty damn sure she does.
"Mm-hmm. I don't,"
she cries, defending herself, her cheeks flushed and eyes wide in embarrassment.
"Tess, it's okay that you do. It's pretty fucking hot, really,"
I assure her.
"I don't."
"Sure, Tessa."
"Okay, you don't."
I raise my hands in defeat, and she whimpers a little from the loss of contact. I knew there was no way in hell she'd admit it. But hey, it was worth a try. Are you going to come into the jacuzzi with me? I ask, and remove my hand from her.